Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. A petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak, a vindictive, bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser, a misogynistic, homophobic, racist, malevolent bully.
The voice of Richard Dawkins, he means what he says. He's one of the new atheists. Our guest in the next hour of Issues Etc. says he actually is an atheist fundamentalist. We'll find out what Dr. Alistair McGrath means by that in the course of this next hour. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Tuesday afternoon, August the 3rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Joining us to talk about atheist fundamentalism, Richard Dawkins. I think Christopher Hitchens would probably fit into that category, as well as a few others. Dr. Alistair McGrath, professor of historical theology at Oxford University. He's co-author of the book, The Dawkins Delusion, Atheist Fundamentalism and the Denial of the Divine. Dr. McGrath, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be with you again.
What do you mean by this term, atheist fundamentalism?
Well, by fundamentalism, I mean a movement that's absolutely certain of its own ideas. If you're wrong, you're in denial. If you disagree with them, you're a fool. And also, they divide the world into two groups, those who are right, those who are wrong. And so in many ways, it is a movement that is mimicking what I think is the worst of, you know, Christian fundamentalism. Now, my atheist friends say, no, you can't call us fundamentalists because we don't interpret a Bible. And maybe there's something in that. But nevertheless, I'm talking about the psychological attitudes. We are certain we are right. That means you're a fool, you're wrong. And also it means that, in effect, they tend to regard those who are not atheists as kind of a intellectually inferior. So I think it's a very appropriate term to use to refer to this specific form of atheism.
If you would, can you distinguish the Dawkins-type atheism? We're not only talking about Richard Dawkins, but many others who follow along his line and his approach. Can you distinguish that from what shall we say, a little more thoughtful kind of atheism? I mean, you've dealt with both.
Yes, I think we can say there are probably three kinds of atheism. One is a kind of atheism that just says, look, I don't want to talk about God. It's something that really doesn't interest me. It's not that they disbelieve in God. It's that they don't really take this question very seriously, or they feel that this isn't something they want to talk about. And in many ways, that's not really atheism at all. It's simply a refusal to think about these questions. But there is another form of atheism, which is basically, I don't believe in God. You do. Well, that's nice for you. I respect your opinion, but I don't. And that kind of atheism is usually quite gracious. It's respectful. It says, look, you know, I understand your reasons for believing in God. I don't happen to share them, but on the whole, I'm respectful of your position. Now, that is where Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens are not. They are of a very dogmatic persuasion. For them, it's not simply there is no God. It's that those who think there is a God are evil, are deluded, are in some ways mentally deficient. And that, I think, is what distinguishes this new atheism from other kinds of atheism. In many ways, it's not so much that its ideas are new. What is new is its aggressiveness towards religious believers.
Why respond to Dawkins? Why not keep your response to the more thoughtful atheist or to the casual atheist who simply wants to put God out of mind?
Yes, that's a very good question. And I guess the answer is this, because it's the very shrill, very aggressive atheism that is getting the attention in the media. And if we as Christians don't respond to this form of atheism, then mainstream society will simply draw the conclusion that there is no response to be given. And I think it's very important that everyone knows that, first of all, the atheist critiques of Christianity are really open to challenge. And secondly, that very good answers can be given to these atheist critiques. So I think it's really about the public defense of the credibility of faith. And it's something I think we ought to be doing.
One of the things that Dawkins proposes in The God Delusion is that faith is kind of something that mankind needed in his more primitive state in earlier times. It was a kind of a necessity, evolutionary necessity, but it's time to grow up and outgrow the notion of God. How do we respond to this?
Well, that's quite a widespread idea within the new atheism. I think there are several things we can say to it. One is that actually there isn't all that much evidence for that belief at all. I think that that does need to be said. But secondly, I think it helps us understand why the new atheism projects itself as being intellectually superior. This is the way we used to be. These religious people, they're still in that place, but we atheists have moved beyond that. Now, I think we need to challenge that at a number of levels. And certainly, we can say, look, the science doesn't take us there at all. But I think much more significant is the following point. Actually, the new atheists have beliefs as well, things that they can't prove. I think it's very important to make the point that the new atheism is a belief system of its own. Christopher Hitchens would reject that. He would say, well, actually, as atheists, we don't believe anything, but they do. They have a series of beliefs about what is right, what is wrong, how we explain things, which actually cannot be proved, and therefore really are a form of faith. And so one of the points I think it's very helpful to make in dialogue with the new atheism is that we are talking about which kind of faith makes most sense. Is it an atheist faith? Is it a Christian faith?
Dawkins also likes to talk about, perhaps not in so many terms or so many words, the improbability of God, that it is simply, if not impossible, I don't think he would say impossible, improbable in the extreme that such a being would exist, and if he did exist, that we would have any real knowledge of him.
Well, that's right. He does say that. And he can be challenged, I think, at several levels. One, he never shows his working. How does he arrive at this conclusion that God is so improbable? That kind of argument has to rest on a series of assumptions, each of which would need to be justified. And we just don't find that in Dawkins. This is more of a rhetorical assertion than an evidence-based argument. So I think that point does need to be made. But, of course, the other point that needs to be made in response to that is that's what Dawkins thinks, but nobody else really does. That most philosophers would say, well, actually, the evidence for God is really rather good. And Dawkins, I think, is in a rather difficult position here because, in effect, he has to argue that the evidence that persuades other people does not persuade him. And I think there's a real problem there. And that's why I think it's very important that we ask Dawkins what the evidence is that belief in God is so vanishingly small in terms of probability that shouldn't be taken seriously. He asserts that, but he doesn't actually argue that.
Does Dawkins, or what does Dawkins have to say with respect to science? What does he assert about science and a belief in God?
Well, I think the core belief we find in Dawkins is that science is the most reliable form of human knowledge that there is. And the only form of truths that we ought to accept are those that are scientifically demonstrated. And certainly in debate with Dawkins, he's very often said to me, I see no scientific reason for believing in God at all. Now, I think the big issue here really is about the limits of science. In many ways, science is so successful precisely because science knows where to draw the line. And I think the real difficulty is that we're seeing a new generation of atheists who are using science as a weapon against religion. And in doing so, they're actually forcing science well beyond its limits limits of competence. So I think there's a real issue here about the abuse of science by the new atheism. What I would want to say to Dawkins is that science cannot answer the big questions of life. For example, what is the meaning of life? Why am I here? And also, of course, is there a God? These lie beyond the scope of the scientific method. And if Dawkins wants to use science to answer those questions, well, my reply would be that you are using science improperly. You're making it answer questions that actually can't answer. And that seems to me to run the risk of bringing science into disrepute.
When we come back, our guest, Dr. McGrath, says that Dawkins and the other new atheists, the atheist fundamentalists, view this as war. They are quite honest about it. A mortal struggle between faith and reason, between religion and science. We'll have Dr. Alistair McGrath explain what he means by that warfare model adopted by atheist fundamentalism on the other side of this break. Dr. Alistair McGrath is professor of historical theology at Oxford University. He's co-author of the book, The Dawkins Delusion, Atheist Fundamentalism and the Denial of the Divine. When you purchase The Dawkins Delusion using the Amazon.com link at our website, a portion of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand and look for The Dawkins Delusion, Atheist Fundamentalism and the Denial of the Divine by our guest in this hour, Dr. Alistair McGrath. When we come back on this Tuesday afternoon, August the 3rd, is it war? Not necessarily that the fundamentalist atheists think that they are waging war against Christianity, but that they're engaged in one that has always been between faith and reason, between religion and science. Do they think they're on the cusp of winning that war? To hear Richard Dawkins and the other atheist fundamentalists talk, it sounds like they've already won, or at least they seem to be declaring victory. Is that declaration premature? We'll be right back.
Dust in the wind. All we are is dust in the wind.
Oh. Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the divine service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
You'll find the reformer Martin Luther's thoughts on Jesus' high priestly prayer and the Passion and Resurrection according to John in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, Luther's Works, Volume 69. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Luther's Works, Volume 69, by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Luther's Works, Volume 69, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old theology, new technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
The CLCC has produced a new seminar to help people understand the structure of LCMS churches. So many people today are unaware of their church polity. This seminar can be downloaded for free from the CLCC website, www.theclcc.org. This is available for a seminar, a self-study, or presentations. And think about joining us. Members can download the PowerPoint version for free. Visit us today at www.theclcc.org.
There still remain four irreducible objections to religious faith. That it wholly misrepresents the origins of man and the cosmos. That because of this original error, it manages to combine the maximum of servility with the maximum of solipsism. That it is both the result and the cause of dangerous sexual repression. and that it is ultimately grounded on wish thinking.
That's Christopher Hitchens, a famous new atheist, an atheist fundamentalist by the measurement of our guest, Dr. Alistair McGrath, professor of historical theology at Oxford University and a co-author of the book The Dawkins Delusion, Atheist Fundamentalism and the Denial of the Divine. Dr. McGrath, in this struggle, you say in your book that men like Richard Dawkins have adopted a warfare model in this respect. Tell us about that.
Well, the warfare model is basically the outlook that says science and religion always have been and always will be in a state of permanent tension. In fact, more than that, that there is a mortal struggle here, and in the end, only one is going to win, and it's science. I think there are two points to make here. One is that history really doesn't support this at all. The relationship between science and religion has actually been very complex. At times, there have been real tensions, but there have also been very important synergies, very important collaborations as well. But much more importantly, I think, is that this is simply outdated. No one takes this seriously anymore. And for me, it's quite astonishing that the last stronghold of this way of looking at things is the new atheism. If there are some new atheists listening to this, I would just say to you, look, I don't think you can be very comfortable with this, because in effect you are making this whole question dependent on a way of thinking which is seriously outdated. And I think it does need to be challenged.
Does Dawkins offer an explanation for the origins, whatever it may be, sociological, cultural, psychological, for the religious impulse?
Yes, he does. He offers a number of explanations. And what I will do, if I may, is I'll single out one in particular in a moment. But I think the point I'd like to make is that this, in theory, ought to be the most, the most persuasive part of the God delusion. In fact, it's one of the weakest parts of the book. And that does seem to be very, very telling, that Dawkins actually finds it very difficult to mount a scientific critique of the reason that people believe in God. But the main scientific argument he uses is to do with what he calls the meme. I'll say that word again, the meme. It's an idea that Dawkins invented back in 1976. And basically, it's a kind of biological replicator that makes people think certain things. And Dawkins' idea is that we believe in God not because there is a God to believe in, but as a thing called the God meme, which in some way influences us to think in this way. Now, this has not met with widespread scientific acclaim. In fact, in many ways, it's on the fringes of science. It's seen by most scientists as being a curiosity or simply something that really is slightly eccentric. It's interesting to note that there are only three real defenders of this idea in contemporary culture: Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, Susan Blackmore, all of whom are members of the New Atheist movement. So again, we have this very interesting situation that an idea that nobody else really takes seriously only lives on in the New Atheism itself. So again, there's a very interesting question there about the public credibility of this movement.
That intrigues me. If you would explain a little in a little more detail, Dr. McGrath, he proposes a biological explanation for the religious impulse. But does he in any way describe the mechanism or the location or any of those things, the physiological mechanism that he is proposing exists?
He offers very loose verbal descriptions. For example, back in 1976, he talked about memes, I quote, leaping from brain to brain. I'll say it again, leaping from brain to brain. Well, my immediate question will be, well, you know, has anyone ever seen this? Has anyone ever seen memes leaping or, in fact, doing anything? And, of course, the answer is no. There is a serious lack of scientific evidence for this whole position. And that's one of the reasons why mainstream science has moved away from this completely. There's no evidence for it. You can offer perfectly good explanations of whatever the meme is meant to explain by other mechanisms. And Dawkins really, I think, has a kind of vested interest in keeping the meme going, because after all, he invented it. I think that the best way of showing how out of date the meme is to tell you about the Journal of Memetics. Now, listeners can actually follow this up online. Just type in to Google Journal of Memetics, and it's an online journal. You can go and look at it. It began in 1997 at the peak of the plausibility of this idea of the meme. In 2005, the journal shut down, and its very last issue, in effect, contained the article that killed the idea off. The contributor simply said, look, this idea doesn't work, it doesn't explain anything, and it's simply a fad that has not been able to survive. It's simply something that doesn't explain anything. There is no point in believing this stuff anymore. So I think there are some very serious questions about this whole idea of the meme and why the new atheism has invested so heavily in using the meme to explain why people believe in God.
Does Dawkins distinguish between religion and belief in God?
Now, that's a very interesting question. He tends to treat them as being synonymous. And, of course, he gets into very deep trouble by doing so, because, of course, various forms of Buddhism do not believe in God. And again, I think it's a very important point to make that, for example, we were talking about memes a moment ago. Are memes about believing in God, or are memes about behaving in a religious way? Well, Dawkins doesn't know, because he's got no idea about the relationship between believing in God and religion. And I think my basic feeling is that Dawkins dislikes both religion and belief in God, so in effect tends to regard them as being pretty much the same thing. But I think all of us know that it's much more complex than that. Let's look at Sam Harris, another member of the New Atheism, who wrote a book called The End of Reason back in 2004. And in this book, Harris is very, very critical of God. But then later on in the book, he talks about how wonderful Eastern mysticism is. And other New Atheists have been very, very angry with him. Why are you saying that this kind of religious mysticism is such a good thing? Isn't it giving the game away, namely that atheism is spiritually deficient? And I think that's a very important question. And certainly I'm aware in my own conversations with members of the New Atheism that many of them do feel that disbelieving in God simply creates a massive spiritual vacuum which they're unable to fill. And that means you can have some very interesting conversations with new atheists who are beginning to wonder whether atheism actually is adequate as a philosophy of life.
Does he make assertions not only about the accidental, I should say, in the philosophical term, the accidental results of religious belief, like the Inquisition's war, the worst that is said about the Crusades, religious strife that continues today, and how he thinks that is driven from within a belief in God itself?
Well, he does make a lot of that, and his basic argument is, look, religion has done all these terrible things, and he mentions all the examples you've given, and of course a few more as well. But his critics within atheism, and I need to say that there are many atheists who are deeply disturbed by Dawkins and Hitchens because they feel that they're giving atheism a bad name. These critics will say, look, it's obvious that people who believe in God do lots of good things, so this completely uncritical approach to religion, which sees it as uniformly negative, is simply indefensible. And so I think Dawkins is aware he's got a problem on his hands there. He's being accused by both religious and atheist people of simply cherry-picking, picking out the facts that seem to suit his theories and disregarding those that actually raised some deep questions about the plausibility of his approach.
Well, Richard Dawkins and the other new atheists seem to at least claim to account for the bloody track record of Christian history, of religious history. When we come back, do they make an accounting for the bloody track record of institutionalized atheism? There is one, quite a track record, especially of recent history. We'll see what Dr. Alistair McGrath says. We're talking about atheist fundamentalism. It's Tuesday afternoon, August the 3rd. If you haven't been to our Facebook fan page, you can go and you can join the now over 4,400 fans of Issues Etc. right there at facebook.com/issuesetc. facebook.com/issuesetc. Become one more fan of Issues Etc. there. You can meet other fans, interact with them, check out guest photos whenever anybody visits here in the studio. We take a picture and we try as quickly as we can to post it at our Facebook fan page. You can also find out what's coming up on Issues Etc., even interact prior to the program at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Well, the track record of institutionalized atheism is horrific. In the last 100 years, in forms largely governmental, atheists have shed a lot of blood. We'll see if they can account for it after this. God is a concept. By which we measure our pain. Yeah. Pain. Yeah.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly. Issuesetc.org. Stay connected. Issuesetc.org.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The risks of telemedicine.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
While Planned Parenthood and its supporters laud video conferences between abortion doctors and patients, many question the safety of prescribing abortion drugs over the Internet. Troy Newman, leader of Operation Rescue in Iowa, called the practice a prescription for disaster, saying, "You are removing the doctor-patient relationship. With this scheme, one abortionist sitting in his pajamas at home could literally do thousands of abortions a week." Planned Parenthood of the Heartland has dispensed abortion drugs using teleconferencing at 16 Iowa clinics since June 2008, resulting in 1,500 abortions.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
You don't have to be dogmatic to reject that Zeus or Apollo or any of the other dead gods. I mean, we all reject these gods. We don't have to prove their absence. I mean, this is one of the fallacies of religious argumentation, the idea that the atheist has to prove the absence of God. Nobody's proved the absence of Zeus. And yet everyone's behaving as though the God of Abraham has a completely different status than these thousands of other dead gods. And he frankly doesn't.
That's Sam Harris, author of Letter to a Christian Nation. And a new atheist. We're talking about atheist fundamentalism. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Alistair McGrath is our guest. Dr. McGrath, have the new atheists like Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, and others, have they attempted an accounting for the bloody track record of institutionalized atheism?
Well, that's where he starts getting very evasive. And certainly, I've said this to him, I know many others have as well, that when atheism came to political power, and the best example is the Soviet Union, but there are other examples as well, then it turns out to be simply nasty. That, for example, when Lenin and Stalin discovered that their educational programs had not eliminated faith in God, well, they started using firing squads and force to help things along. And Dawkins, I think, is in denial about that kind of thing. I mean, he says that no atheist in the world would do these bad things. But I think that's an ivory tower atheism, which simply refuses to engage with the harsh realities of history. And the point I regularly make against both Dawkins and Hitchens is that atheism is open to precisely the same criticisms that they direct against religious belief. And they need to be honest about this, because actually it raises a fascinating question. Maybe the problem isn't atheism, maybe it's not religion, maybe there's something wrong with human nature. And that, of course, raises the whole question of redemption, for which Christianity's got some rather good answers, but unfortunately, atheism hasn't.
Well, that's exactly what I was curious about, following upon your comment there. How does Dawkins characterize human nature?
Well, Dawkins, on the whole, has a very optimistic view of human nature. But I think there is a real problem here, and it's a problem that has probably occurred to everyone listening to this program. If Dawkins is saying religion is evil, and Dawkins is saying human nature is good, then why did human beings start believing in God? How do we explain the origins of evil in this perspective? And Dawkins and others actually really find this quite a difficult question to engage with. How are they able to account for the origins of religion on their system? In the end, they end up with a form of dualism. Well, there are good guys and there are bad guys, and the bad guys invented religion. The good guys are the atheists. But actually, A, that's just a kind of atheist Gnosticism, but much more importantly, it's in effect a recalibration of the whole atheist worldview to accommodate for this very difficult point, which is that human beings believe in God. Christopher Hitchens, for example, in his book God Is Not Great, says, look, the mildest criticism of religion is that it's a human invention. But actually, that is a real problem for Hitchens himself, because what he's got to face up to is that, having said religion is evil, that's something human beings have created. And again, it's a real problem for a new atheism. They want to talk about the goodness of human nature, but their own way of looking at things means that human nature is morally very ambivalent.
What kind of a person, or writ large, what kind of a society do the new atheists like Hitchens and Dawkins envision if the belief in God can be outgrown or in some other way eradicated?
Well, I think both of them would say that it's only a matter of time before belief in God disappears. But that's a real problem for them because, of course, the empirical evidence is that in virtually every part of the world except for Western Europe, belief in God is very, very resilient indeed. The kind of society they would like to see is one where people are allowed to believe in God, of course, providing they do it in private and don't do anything in public that exhibits this faith. But their basic argument is that God needs to be forced out of the public arena and simply made a private belief for those who are mad enough to believe in it. And certainly their stated objective really is to eliminate religion as a public presence. And you can see this, for example, in Western Europe, where there is considerable pressure to remove religious vocabulary, religious symbols, religious people from public service. And I imagine you're finding similar pressures in the United States as well.
What do Dawkins and the other new atheists do with Jesus?
Well, I think they are very ambivalent towards him. On the whole, Dawkins thinks that Jesus might have existed, but he's not really very sure. And he spends two pages of the God delusion saying why he doesn't think that Jesus was a good thing at all. He says, for example, Jesus had rather dodgy family values. I personally think it's one of the weakest parts of his book. And I think that the real problem that Dawkins has is that he doesn't really seem to know all that much about Jesus. To give you an example, he says that Jesus, in effect, created in-groups and out-groups, and thus encouraged us to hate our enemies. But even a casual reading of the New Testament will bring you to light the parable of the Good Samaritan, which is precisely about this transcending of in-groups and out-groups. And, of course, a constant New Testament theme, and in the Gospels particularly, is love your enemies. Dawkins airbrushes those things out of his picture of Jesus. And I think Jesus is sufficiently well known to most people for people to notice how inadequate this depiction of Jesus actually is.
How does Dawkins respond to criticisms of atheism, in particular his brand of atheism?
Well, he does seem to be quite sensitive about this. I mean, one of the paradoxes is that Dawkins is highly critical of other people, for example, myself or anyone who believes in God. When they start getting critical of him in return, he seems to be very soft-skinned. I think that in many ways he takes the view, well, you know, isn't that what you'd expect? This is just typical of religious people. When they're confronted with the truth, all they can do is deny it. I think the real issue that we need to focus on is that Dawkins argues that both reason and science demonstrate that there is no God. And so when someone like, for example, Professor John Lennox debates Dawkins publicly and is able to use science and reason to actually undermine Dawkins' own position, he becomes extremely unhappy. And I think that that really is one of the problems New Atheism faces, that actually reason and science are much more ambivalent than they're prepared to allow. And they tend to present reason and science as ineluctably, conclusively pointing towards atheism, whereas in fact they don't. They're very ambivalent. They could equally well point towards faith. And that, I think, is a real problem for them. I think what they want to say is that it is obvious to any thinking person there is no God. Those who believe in God are simply ignorant or stupid. And when people are able to show that the arguments do not lead to that conclusion, clearly it puts the New Atheism in a very difficult place.
It strikes me that there is some difference, and I can't put my finger on it, between the old school atheists and the new atheists on the natural knowledge of God, what Dr. Jay Bujaszewski has termed what we can't not know. How would you characterize that, the difference between old school atheists and the new atheists on either explaining or explaining away this? It's not just the religious impulse. It is this knowledge that cannot be erased from our minds, that there is an other out there.
Yes, I think that's a very good question. And the new atheism would say, well, look, this is simply a primitive instinct that we need to move away from. It doesn't mean anything. And in effect, they simply dogmatically reject this as having any significance. It's not so much this rejection is the conclusion of their arguments, it's the presupposition of their whole approach. Whereas older atheists take a very different position. Let's take Iris Murdoch, who is an old-fashioned atheist, a very distinguished atheist philosopher. She died about 15 years ago. But she was absolutely clear there is something in human nature that is pointing beyond itself. Maybe it points to God. Murdoch doesn't think so herself, but she is very clear that there are those who think it does, and they have good reason for thinking so, even though she doesn't share their arguments. But she does make the point that no form of atheism can deny this or rest content with evading it. And it seems to me that points to the much greater intellectual sophistication of older forms of atheism. They may lack the aggressiveness, the simplicity of the new atheism, but there's something much more intellectually significant in these older forms of atheism.
When we come back, 10 more minutes with Dr. Alistair McGrath, professor of historical theology at Oxford University, co-author of the book The Dawkins Delusion, Atheist Fundamentalism and the Denial of the Divine. It's Tuesday afternoon, August the 3rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Strikes me that the old atheists were capable of uttering a phrase that the new atheists aren't. The old atheist could say, I don't know. In fact, some of the old classical atheists were even willing to say they don't know if there is a God. They were essentially agnostic. They would fall on the question, probably answering it no, but they were still willing, some of them, to admit they don't know. Are the new atheists capable of saying that? We'll be right back. Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
LCMS Inc. canceled this? You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Do you think there's any chance that when the final hour comes for you, when you're on your deathbed, you might have a second thought and suddenly get cold feet?
I tell you what, when I'm on my deathbed, I'm going to have a tape recorder switched on, because time and again, people like me are the victims of malicious stories after they're dead, people saying they had a deathbed conversion when they didn't. There's a story that even Darwin had a deathbed conversion, which is a complete lie, but it's widely believed by creationists, and it happens again and again and again. So I'm going to have witnesses, and I'm going to have a tape recorder switched on.
That's Richard Dawkins talking with comedian Bill Maher about what he expects his final days, his final moments, to sound like. He's pretty certain there will be no deathbed conversion. We're talking about atheist fundamentalism. Dr. Alistair McGrath is our guest. If you go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, we have something there new for you every week. We call it the Church Bulletin Blurb, for lack of a better word. It's a little information on Issues Etc. that you can copy and paste and give to your secretary or to your pastor so they can include it in your church bulletin every week. It's a way of letting your fellow parishioners on a Sunday morning know what's coming up on Issues Etc., what's been on Issues Etc., and what the show is all about, and a way of encouraging them to listen too. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, copy and paste the text, send it to your pastor or your church secretary. Dr. McGrath, it strikes me that the old school atheists were capable of saying, I don't know. They would admit a limit to the certainty of their knowledge at the very least. What about the new atheists?
Absolutely, and that's why I use the phrase atheist fundamentalism. Fundamentalism is not prepared to dialogue. We're right and you are wrong. So what's the point? The whole point is we want to defeat you. If you want to talk to us, you can talk to us about your terms of surrender, but there's nothing else to talk about. You are so obviously wrong. older atheists were aware that the evidence was much more ambivalent than Dawkins and Hitchens allow. There might indeed be a God, even though they don't personally believe in God. And so actually they were happy to dialogue because they took the view, well, we don't believe in God, but actually we're not sure. So having a dialogue is intellectually interesting and important. So we have this much greater openness, for example, on the part of Iris Murdoch towards religious belief and from religious believers towards Iris Murdoch than you ever find with Dawkins or Hitchens.
St. Paul tells us in the first several chapters of his epistle to the Romans that the natural knowledge of God cannot be denied. It can be suppressed, but it cannot be denied. And that when suppressed, man inevitably finds a substitute for knowledge of God the Creator. What is Richard Dawkins' substitute?
Well, that is very interesting. I was visiting some new atheist websites the other day, and did you know that you can buy a kind of badge that you can wear if a new atheist? And it has these words, "What would Dawkins do?" In other words, it's in effect making a comparison with what would Jesus do and saying, hey, Dawkins is our Jesus. And this is one of the most interesting aspects of the new atheism. At the popular level, Dawkins and Hitchens have become cult figures. They've almost become religious leaders in their own right. And interestingly, for example, when I say to my new atheist colleagues, of course, there are some obvious problems with Dawkins' book, The God Delusion is full of mistakes. They will say, no, you may think there are some mistakes, but that text is infallible. So we're seeing almost like the atheist inversion of religious belief. We have an infallible text. We have infallible religious leaders. What do the new atheists believe in when they stop believing in God? Well, as you know, many years ago, G.K. Chesterton said, when people stop believing in God, they start believing in anything. And interestingly, they're tending to regard both Dawkins and Hitchens as kind of gurus who've displaced God. That's one of the reasons why, for example, when Dawkins began to shut down sections of his website, so many atheists really went mad with anger, because it brought home to them that Dawkins was simply a human figure, fallible like everyone else. And that really was an insight they didn't want to have.
What is different between the worldview, the ideas, and the approach of new atheists like Dawkins and that of, say, Friedrich Nietzsche, who was philosophically prepared to declare God dead?
Well, Nietzsche, as you rightly pointed out in the 1880s, said, God is dead. And the key point here is that Nietzsche said that with great sadness. He thought, I see this happening in European culture, and I don't like this at all. I think this is going to have very bad implications. For example, Nietzsche pointed out, as I'm sure many of your listeners will know, that if you abandon belief in God, then no longer is there any ground for morality. And Nietzsche says that means we simply follow what he calls the herd instinct. We do what everyone else is doing. And Nietzsche really was deeply concerned. He was an atheist, yes, but he didn't think this was a good thing at all. He thought it really opened the door to all kinds of bad developments. Dawkins thinks atheism is great. It gets rid of a problem. It doesn't cause any problems. But I think anyone who's looked at the history of the Soviet Union will be very much aware of what some of those problems are. No God, no absolute ground for morality at all. And that seems to me to be simply the start of the problems.
Finally then, Dr. McGrath, when confronted with the arguments, the writings, and now very popular books by the new atheists, how should we respond?
I think there are two things we need to say. Number one is, yes, they're very popular, but they're not as popular as the new atheists make out. For example, Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, has sold nearly 1 million copies in the North American sales area. That raises some very interesting questions. My atheist friends are very pleased that Dawkins' book has sold that well, But in private, they say it hasn't sold that well. Secondly, I think we ought to see Dawkins and Hitchens as opening doors for discussion. It has never been easier to talk about God. In many ways, they've done us a service by opening this whole area up. What I want to say to your listeners is, look, you can have some very good conversations with these people. Don't be frightened. Realize that there are very good answers to the questions these people are raising. Find out what they are and get engaged. And what you will find, I think, is that those conversations may go in some very interesting directions.
Dr. Alistair McGrath is professor of historical theology at Oxford University. He's co-author of the book The Dawkins Delusion, Atheist Fundamentalism and the Denial of the Divine. You can purchase The Dawkins Delusion using the Amazon.com link at our website. And when you do, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for The Dawkins Delusion by Dr. Alistair McGrath. Dr. McGrath, thank you very much for your time.
It's been my pleasure to be with you.
Folks, you can help us defend the faith and teach the truth by making a tax-deductible gift to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. today. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or you can contribute by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. That address, LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thank you for thinking of us during these difficult summer months. The atheist is fighting something, isn't he? If he really, truly, and consistently believed what he says he believes, he wouldn't need to fight at all. A God that does not exist requires no response. Of course, he would say, the new atheist would say, there are many people who mistakenly believe that God exists, therefore I'm not really fighting against God, but I'm fighting against the notion of God. Of course, that requires that he explain a lot of things, like we've seen in the course of our conversation with Dr. McGrath. They have to explain the notion of God. Where did that come from? They have to explain why it is men consistently, persistently, insistently believe in a God or gods. Why the religious impulse? And they have to be able to make some distinctions between things like religion and a belief in God. And really engage religion for what it is, in general, more specifically, Christianity for what it is. Now, this is where I think the new atheists have simply, I think they have simply not met up to the task that atheism, consistent atheism, has set for them. I do not hear them engaging Christianity for what it really is. They engage a caricature of Christianity, a caricature of Jesus, a caricature of the claims of Christianity. And that's easy to do because you get to set the rules. You get to decide what in your caricature of Christianity you're going to respond to, you're going to argue with. I challenge them, the new atheists. Deal with Christianity as it is, and namely, with Jesus Christ for the claims that he has made. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.